to the ASP podcast. Today we have a special event and we're joined by DJ Two-Tone Jones, who is a professional DJ and educator residing in the Washington DC area. Since 2005, he has worked with a hip-hop-based non-profit organization, World Beats and Life, to engage and instruct young people through the art of DJing and the game of chess.
Yeah.
Lots of overlinks there.
Yeah, yeah.
And along with Gerald Watson, Two-Tone created Shaolin Jazz, a multifaceted project that explores the musical and cultural parallels between jazz and hip-hop. Mm-hmm. We're also joined by Paul Rokowa, who is the Executive Director of Levantine Public Diplomacy, an independent public diplomacy organization. They are partners with the University of North Carolina's Music Department to run the new Department of State's Hip Hop Diplomacy Program, Next Level. And we also have our Public Diplomacy Fellow, Matthew Wallen. Welcome.
Hey, thanks, hey. Paul.
Thank you.
Thank you.
DJ Two-Tone, you've been traveling around India.
Yes, yes, for about 3 weeks. Yeah.
And where in India were you?
We spent 2 weeks in Patna in the state of Bihar, and from there we moved to Calcutta, where we stayed for one more week.
And so what were you actually doing in India?
A lot, actually. For the first 2 weeks, we worked with the students from a high school called St. Karen's High School in Patna, and we conducted a series of different workshops geared at or aimed at different areas of hip-hop culture. So myself being there, I taught a DJ workshop or DJ class for about 2 weeks, or almost really more so about a week and a half. And we had a dancer there teaching dance and different styles of dance. We had a beat maker there who brought a kind of a small beat pad and a program on a laptop to show how to manipulate sounds through a beat production. And we also had an MC there who, really engaged the students with the art of rhyming and really more so explaining more so what that is as it relates to American hip-hop culture. So that's part of what we did in the first 2 weeks. We also worked with the students to create a series of public service announcements for both TV and radio aimed at issues that they felt were the most kind of pressing issues affecting them and their communities. So we had PSAs ranging from gender issues or gender equality to pollution and various forms of pollution, and also civic rights and youth kind of taking more of a stand or initiative, I guess, with that in their household. So that plus, at the end of the 2 weeks, we did a kind of a culminating end of program performance. Where we not only performed ourselves in terms of the different artists from the U.S., but we also had the students involved in the performances. So taking what they learned in that amount of time and creating different segments to not only exhibit hip-hop and some of the things they learned, but also to tie in some of the different themes from the PSAs as well. So that was the first 2 weeks.
Wow. That's a busy time. Before we get sort of into the music itself, mm-hmm. Paul, how does that fit within U.S. public diplomacy?
Sure. Well, the program itself is sponsored by the U.S. State Department, by the Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs, and it's implemented by the University of North Carolina's Department of Music. And the program itself, Next Level, is a new hip-hop diplomacy program that really focuses on leadership. It focuses on conflict resolution through hip-hop. And the program runs in 7 countries. It runs in India, which was the first one that we did, Bangladesh, Serbia, Bosnia, Senegal, and Zimbabwe. Also, Montenegro is part of the Bosnia program. And the program itself works on both sharing American hip-hop and hip-hop culture and dance, and focusing on hip-hop because hip-hop has been such a vehicle for empowerment in communities. Hip-hop was born out of New York during a time in New York where the situation was very difficult and people in the communities felt like they weren't being listened to. And hip-hop really was born as a bit of social consciousness to explain to the communities that weren't listening through verbal and nonverbal ways that hip-hop was a way of expressing what was going on. And so that's why hip-hop has been a very powerful medium for expression all over the world, and why we're working in different places to use hip-hop as a means of teaching young people to express about the issues in their community and around them.
Now, can you talk a little bit more about that? Because we were discussing earlier about some of the controversy around some hip-hop and rap, especially with some of the modern commercial stuff out there that, you know, suffers from misogyny and violence and that sort of issue. So, I mean, how does that translate into conflict resolution?
Well, I think the one of the bigger differences with, I guess, hip-hop or rap as is most often kind of seen or talked about, more so your more commercial mainstream forms of rap and hip-hop, the difference is the type of artists that were brought out and selected for this program all are more... and I hate to use the word purist in a sense, but like we come from, I guess, a time in hip hop where the art of the music, the art form itself, mattered a lot. I mean, that's pretty much at the core of it. So we do it as an art form. Like I consider DJing and what I do with DJing an art form, and I perform just like a singer would perform or a jazz musician would perform. You know, I can solo, I can improvise and things like that. So, but these are elements you don't normally see on the images that are mostly, you know, projected throughout a lot of mainstream popular rap music. So the great thing with the program is kind of, you know, taking artists who work with hip hop in its kind of truest essence and engaging other youth in other places around the world with that. So that they get a better sense of the art and the culture of hip-hop, and not just really this like 10-15% that's seen on TV and heard on radio. And also, you know, it's the interesting thing about even just collaborating with the youth, even just talking with them about the music. You know, some of the artists that we met from Calcutta, and they have a small kind of hip-hop scene going on there, and a lot of b-boys and people who are even DJ and things like that. And the way they talk about what they're into and what they're not is the same thing that, you know, I have conversations about. So one of the DJs, you know, we're talking about music, and he says, yeah, I DJ a couple different places around town, and yeah, I gotta play that whack stuff all the time, you know, the commercial mainstream stuff, but I don't get to play the stuff I really like. And I'm, you know, I tell them, say, I have conversations like this all the time. I play places where, yeah, I have to play certain things that is the popular song, but I never listen to this stuff. I don't really care for it. And again, the music that I listen to is it's just a little bit more true to the art form. I like to hear people rhyme about something of substance. And you have, you know, for every 10 rappers you see on TV who have videos, there's about 500 out there that aren't on TV or don't have videos or aren't on the radio that do produce and make good music. So, you know, the great thing again about this program is they took artists of that, you know, that level of hip hop, and who really, you know, they care about it enough and do so much with it that it is an art form. So yeah, you could probably pick 10 people off the radio and they wouldn't be able to do what the artists in the program do. Just like you can, you know, no disrespect to other DJs doing well, but if you put David Guetta in here, I would embarrass him on turntables just because he presses play, you know. The you know, the fact that a DJ would cancel a whole major concert because they didn't have their flash drive, you know, that I would never say, you know, that would never happen. But you know, so again, I think the program was very smart about selecting, you know, those kinds of artists that really know about, you know, their craft and also where it comes from, and then showing those connections, because yeah, the same thing, the things that the kids in Calcutta were talking about in terms of what they go through and their hardships, things I've heard echo from people, you know, from New York, you know, that lived, you know, through the 70s and the 80s, from LA or Compton or Atlanta, or, you know, even smaller towns where they have gang issues or they got, you know, that people are discriminated against. I mean, these are the same kinds of things, but just in a different language.
One final question before we get into the music and the art itself is for Matthew. How does this program, cultural diplomacy, fit in with U.S. national security and national interest?
Well, you know, for a long time we think about, and for a long time we have thought about U.S. national security in terms of military power or economic power, but a lot of it comes down to cultural power as well, the soft power sort of things that we talk about a lot here at ASP. And that's not to discount the hard power sort of things. It's what we call smart power. It's about combining the two, understanding that national power is a combination of all the things that make a country powerful, whether that's cultural, musical, or artistic aspects, to the way that people feel and think, to building relationships overseas so that you build credibility with your foreign audiences, you find commonality and understanding, and that hopefully you can resolve your problems in more practical ways that don't involve bloodshed, while understanding that in some cases that may still be necessary. You see this sort of stuff going down in Iraq right now, where it comes to arms between people. So if we have a more proactive measure where we're actually building these relationships, we can understand where people are coming from, then we can develop techniques to speak with them, to build relationships with them in a way that resonates, so that we're not always butting heads. So I'm curious, Paul, what experience did you have in terms of how this helped build relationships overseas, both between India and the United States and on a person-to-person level?
Well, person-to-person level, it's profound. I mean, and we really call this program to be a two-way exchange. So it's not only just American artists going over and sharing hip-hop culture, but also learning Indian music and dance, the classic Indian Kathak music, or we were working in Calcutta with Bawal singers. Bawal is like Bengali folk music, and building a space in which we can let people communicate and really feel that they're sharing their culture with an aspect of respect for the culture. So it's not just us going over there and saying, this is American hip-hop, this is the best. It's saying this is part of who we are, and we want to know about what who you are, and let's see where we can meet. Really, I think the best part about building the space in which you're sharing these cultures is you see people who aren't normally involved in hip-hop. I mean, we had classic Indian musicians who joined us and were, had no idea what hip-hop was about, but said, this is amazing. This is something that's so interesting. And then the beats and playing with the different instruments, and seeing how you can play with the different beats. Mm-hmm. So I think just building that space in which cultures can communicate, with respect and with understanding ultimately helps create better relations between India and the U.S., between the U.S. and other countries. And the the coverage that came out of this, I mean, people in Calcutta were amazed that we were mixing Bawal music, this traditional Bengali music, with American hip-hop, and that the fusion that came out of it was something so special and so profound. And people were proud that this was, a real sharing of cultures and that you were building something together. I mean, one of the most famous styles of music that came out of cultural diplomacy was bossa nova, when the jazz ambassadors were working in Brazil, and that was something that the people like Dave Brubeck were working with local Brazilian musicians. Together they innovated and created new music. And I think, as you were talking about with cultural diplomacy, I mean, I would really argue that jazz won the Cold War. This was
that and rock and roll.
Very true. I mean, cultural diplomacy and people wanting to emulate your music, your style, your culture is powerful. It undermined the Soviet Union because kids were talking like Willis Conover from Jazz Hour on Voice of America. I mean, they were, jazz was banned in the Soviet Union, and so kids were listening to it under their covers at night, and wanting to be jazz musicians. I mean, in the same way that jazz, was the most powerful form of music and the most powerful form of expression during the Cold War, hip-hop is today. Jazz, with its improvisational styles, was a fight against authoritarianism. Well, the same way that hip-hop today is a vehicle for expression and sharing about what's going on in your community.
And that factors a little bit. You speak about improvisation. It's, you have to work within a set of rules, and that's something that was almost foreign to a lot of people overseas, is being able to work within that set of rules and be independent at the same time.
One of the things we did in the Performing Arts Academy, the Hip Hop Academy in Patna, is we worked a lot with these students about taking leadership and taking ownership in your school, in your family, in your community. And that's really what we worked with them on for the public service announcements, but also getting them to take ownership over this project. I mean, as Two-Tone mentioned, we didn't come up with the issues. We asked them what they thought the issues were. Mm-hmm. We asked them to speak with their classmates about what their classmates thought the issues were, and get them to express that. I mean, we wanted these students to be hip-hop. We wanted them to improvise when we came into problems that you will when you come up with you only have a week to put something together. And so we gave the students a lot of leeway to take leadership and ownership in this. And I think that was, I mean, a very American, good old Boy Scout, like, go do it. But that wasn't always something that was as familiar to them. But I think the students in India really gained from it.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Well done.
Show us what you did.
I'll just give you a little kind of example here. Just explain real quick. This device right here is called a DJ controller, and this is what I basically used while I was over in India for the most part. And this is what I use to teach workshops on. And a lot of DJs who travel use devices like these because, as you can see, they're a lot more kind of convenient to carry around compared to two full turntables and a mixer and all that. So one of the things, I want to say the first thing that I probably even messed around with, I'll play this song, and Lord knows I can't pronounce the name of the title, so I won't try to, but just kind of, I think for some of the people we met over there, teachers, even students, they knew some of their traditional music was different, just completely different from ours. I mean, and honestly, even the more contemporary music they listen to is basically sounds like our pop music or electronic music that you hear around the world in clubs and things like that. So, I started playing around with this just to kind of show them that, you can find similar rhythms in different songs, no matter whether it's old or new, traditional, foreign. So this song I just kind of just would play around with and kind of juggle around with, and let's see if this thing will work for us too. All right. Let's see.
So, I mean, that was really fantastic. I mean, and obviously a lot of American audiences have never heard anything like that. So, I mean, tell us a little bit about how that came about and how that works and the type of mixture that you do there.
Basically the technique I was doing is what we call beat juggling, or sometimes it's called beat juggling, sometimes it's called backspinning. And this technique of where you play a record, you have two of the same songs, and you play a part, and then you go back to that same part on the other side, and then you backspin this back, go back to the same part, and you just keep playing that same part back and forth. That's actually kind of at the core of how hip-hop music started and even what we know of as hip-hop production. So, and it's something I explained to the students, too, the first day or two about hip-hop started off with young people in places like the South Bronx having parties in the parks. And a DJ would come out and set up, and you have some of your kind of godfathers of hip-hop, names like DJ Kool Herc, Afrika Bambaataa, Grandmaster Flash, and Grand Wizard Theodore, some others who would set up in the parks, and they would play records, but they would get two of the same record and play a certain part. And they'll call, if you ever hear the term, the breaks. Basically, you would find a part of a record where it kind of breaks down, and maybe just the drums are playing or something like that. So it might be a 5-10 second part of a song. And a lot of the young people back then would like those parts. The dancers would like those parts more than any other part of the song. So the DJ would extend it by backspinning it and playing it over and over. And so that really kind of is the beginning of a looping, a sample, which later evolved into hip-hop production. So a lot of hip-hop producers loop parts of different songs and then maybe add other elements. So that was just kind of an example of backspinning. I was just, and again, the first time I was listening to this record, I just found different parts where kind of like the rhythms and the grooves, and so I just would just mess around and find one part, just bring it back, and just maybe just kind of cut and scratch to the rhythm of it. So that's in essence.
Could you show us an example of the hip-hop that you took over to India?
You said a hip-hop, what of it?
This is the U.S. style of hip-hop you do. What did you show?
Just to kind of meet them halfway a little bit. I kind of put together a folder of different songs, American hip-hop songs, that have sampled Indian music before. And you have a lot of, well-known artists, from people like Jay-Z to Missy Elliott to Mos Def. These people have used songs. So can't even give you an example of a song that I'll do this one. Okay. So it's an example of a Missy Elliott song that was a kind of a hit years ago. I don't want to show my age here, but yeah. But yeah, songs like this. Played that for them, and it was with the students in Patna, because they were a little younger. They were, again, mostly high school, with some would be a little younger, mainly high school. Okay. The certain names, they're artists that from the U.S. that their household names everywhere. So saying like a person like Jay-Z or Beyonce, they are familiar with the names. But it was also interesting finding out about people they either didn't know about or they only knew just a small amount.
Doesn't make sense to start off with those things that they're familiar with?
Just even have a discussion about it, because the biggest difference between the students we work with in Patna versus Calcutta, the students in Patna, younger, and I think in a city like that compared to Calcutta, a little bit more isolated from certain things. So they only got like the top of the things that were kind of exported out the U.S. like a Beyonce, like a Jay-Z, but then you would name other artists that you would think they would know about, and they're kind of like, no, we haven't heard of them, or Probably most surprising thing was there's a popular kind of classic Jay-Z club song he did with the Indian artist by the name of Punjabi MC. And it was a big hit for a while. Yet they had no idea who Punjabi MC was, which was strange. I was thinking like, oh, we would assume that he was just a big hit when this song came out because they would play it everywhere back in the U.S. But so they didn't really have a, you know, point of reference, frame of reference for who that was. I even brought up names like Will Smith, but then I asked, have you ever heard of the Fresh Prince? And they're like, no, who's that? And it's like, that's Will, you know, I play parents just don't understand for them. And I was like, yes, that is the actor, Will Smith. So again, there was just a lot less they knew about in terms of specifics about different people or even people in general. Whereas in Calcutta, we had some older students, but they were just a bit more immersed into the culture. So they knew about names, even like people like Big Daddy Kane or MC Light or some older hip hop artists, and then some new ones, but they still were kind of missing a lot of artists that kind of in between. So throughout the 1990s, early 2000s, there's a lot of people they don't really know about, but they knew a little bit more about some of the kind of specifics with a lot of hip hop stuff. So
it sounds like you're bringing up some of the challenges and maybe some of the surprises that you experienced. Yeah. Can you expand on that a little bit more? Some of the problems you may have run into, or some of the things that really surprised you?
You want to start on that?
Sure. Well, I mean, just putting any kind of you know, cultural diplomacy program together, like there's always issues of like power issues. I mean, we were supposed to give a concert at our last big concert at a club called the Princeton Club, and we had turntables rented, proper turntables, not the controller that Two-Tone's using now, and we shorted out the power, of which we didn't realize until after we had exhausted every other type of plug that we could plug in and had to get backup turntables, which luckily the club was near a basically like a hip-hop den that we had been hanging out in. Other issues, just sometimes miscommunications. Like we were asked when we were working in Patna at the school, the principal had asked if we could give a brief demo for some of the kids who were graduating who weren't part of the academy. And so we kind of said, sure, no problem. In the break, we can give a little 10-minute demonstration. And we walk into the auditorium, and there's 350 people there sitting waiting for a concert. And we all kind of, our eyes widened, and everyone rolled with it. And Two-Tone got up and introduced DJing, and Co introduced beatmaking, and everyone kind of went through the elements of it and put on an impromptu concert and, you know, on the fly for 300 people. And I mean, it's things like that. There's always challenges. I mean, dealing with different cultures and having to navigate different cultural expectations for things are always challenges. But I mean, thankfully, you know, we had a very good team who were pretty flexible and we rolled through it.
Oh yeah.
So I think maybe before we wrap up, give us one more sample of the type of stuff we were playing over there. And
all right.
The Kotick.
The Kotick, yeah.
Yeah.
I know you're gonna ask about that, so I had that ready. I actually don't have the beat that he actually did to with it. Sorry. So this last I'll play a little bit of this. I'll juggle this one a little bit too. So this song, when we first arrived, our first day at the school in Patna. So this is our first day getting into it. They had a kind of a welcome presentation and ceremony for us. And they had this group of girls come out and do this traditional Indian kind of welcoming dance. I forgot when I got my hands on the song itself, but the beat maker, Co, and I just one night happened to be in the hotel room just playing with the song. And by the end of the 2 weeks, we basically put together, along with the dancer, the MC, an actual piece from that song that was the welcome. So that actually was the way we closed the show. So the actual show opened with the same traditional dance, and we kind of remixed the song and closed it. Now, unfortunately, I don't have the full remix version of this, but I can kind of play around, do some of the stuff that I was doing with this when we first got this song.
Come on.
Incredible.
This has been absolutely fascinating, and it just shows you the not only the power of public diplomacy, but the power of music throughout the world, and how people are the same.
And Paul, did you want to add one more thing?
Yeah. So one of the things that I think was at least a highlight for me on the program is we worked with a State Department sibling program called One Beat. One Beat's a fascinating program. It's an international music residency, and it's for open to about 40 different countries, of which they get 5,000 applications, and they bring just some of the most incredible performers, you know, musicians, performing artists to the States to do an international music residency. And they tour around the States doing programs. And we connected with one of the alumni of this program, a woman named Malabika, and we met her in Calcutta. She was the Baul singer. And we got to connect between Baul and hip-hop, and it was just this amazing interplay of culture. And the thing that I think is most fascinating is Matt and I went to grad school together at USC, and we have this kind of reverence for the golden age of cultural diplomacy through USIA. And I got to say, I've worked enough in the field in public diplomacy. I got to say, this is one of the most innovative times for cultural diplomacy with different programs that the State Department is doing.
And absolutely.
I don't mean to make them blush, but they have between Next Level, which is hip-hop, and One Beat, which is this international music residency, and they have another one called Dance Motion USA, which sends out dance troops all over the world. And I used to work on the American Music Abroad program, and they have another one called Center Stage, which is the converse of American Music Abroad. I mean, some of the best cultural diplomacy programs in the world are being done by the State Department, and it flies a little under the radar because it's being done abroad. But there isn't another country out there that's doing this type of innovative cultural diplomacy. And I know this from living in Paris and talking to people there, and living in Taiwan and being a visiting fellow at a think tank in Taiwan. This is really one of the best times for cultural diplomacy, and it's not really appreciated or understood.
And it needs to be supported.
I hope so.
That's a great point to leave on. I just want to thank DJ Two-Tone and Paul, Matthew, and until next time, goodbye.
All right.